podcast the exact same way that I started the other podcast that I host, the Minor League Baseball Podcast, the show before the show, and alert everyone to something that happened to me this week. Anthony Masterson, hello.
Oh, hi. Great. Let's just start this up.
Let's talk about me, Anthony.
It's all about you.
Let's talk about
me. Like it always is. Yeah.
I got into a Twitter spat with Joe Buck this week.
But you like Joe Buck.
I love Joe Buck and had no intention in this being a thing that happened, and yet I got into a Twitter spat with Joe Buck.
He's back on Twitter, and he's feisty.
And he's feisty.
Yeah.
So here's what happened. I tweeted at Joe Buck. Joe Buck got back on Twitter, and I tweeted at him and said something along the lines of, like, man, I didn't even tweet it at him. I just tweeted, man, Joe Buck is on Twitter again, and I forgot to remember the thing that I wanted to ask him about at one time on Twitter. And Joe Buck responded with this, quote, let me guess, I hate your team, I'm boring, lucky I had a famous father, I suck, I have a big forehead. And then he ended it with this, which I don't really get, but he said, now sleep. I don't get it, because it was like the middle of the day. So that part I didn't get. But Joe Buck just, like, went savage on me.
Oh, he's going for it. Going for it.
Just, like, went nuts on Twitter. And, like, I texted a handful of people who saw it happen and had messaged me, and I was like, you know, I think the thing is, like, Joe Buck just, everything has sucked for Joe Buck on Twitter. And so he just assumes that when I said, quote, at Buck has returned to Twitter and I forgot the thing I wanted to tweet at him like a year ago during his hiatus, he just assumed that I was putting him on blast.
Yes.
And I wasn't. I love Joe Buck. I'm the only person in the world. Me and, like, Joe Buck's mom are the only people in the world who love Joe Buck. And I had to respond to it and be like, hey, no, I actually really like you. And he never responded to that. And then I was just taken up as this hero for the rest of the day by all these people who hate Joe Buck, who are like, yeah, let's get behind this guy. He also hates Joe Buck. No, I don't. I love Joe Buck.
I've actually had some run-ins with Joe Buck, not of the bad kind. I've had, you know, meetings with him and
I know,
you
know, tell him that
seminars,
I like
stuff
him.
Like that. And Joe Buck is actually a very, very friendly and
he
nice
seems
guy.
Hilarious.
But he does have this view of the world that is very insular because everybody just hates him so much.
Yeah. And really for no reason.
And because he's a national voice. I mean, of all the national broadcasters that do football, baseball, whatever, how many of them are universally loved and revered? Vince Scully, he hasn't done national broadcasts in 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
Like, of any of those guys, the Al Michaels, the Bob Costas.
Somebody put it very well to Joe Buck and said the reason that everybody dislikes him is because he calls the biggest games. And somebody always has to lose those games. So the teams who lose those games, their fan base is like, whoa, it's Joe Buck's fault. Joe Buck hates my team. But I love Joe Buck. I think he's phenomenal. I think he's a phenomenal broadcaster. And there he was, just like, Mickey Mantle, Jerry, my idol. You know, like, come on.
No, we were actually at our baseball seminar before the season. I may have told the story before, but the baseball seminar before the season began with all the Fox people and all
you
the Fox regional networks were there. And we were having discussions about how to present news and events that happen on the sporting field. We had, you know, the final play of the Super Bowl. We had, like, Serena Williams being, like, you know, bewildered and flustered and, like, you know, stumbling over when she was, like, sick that one time at Wimbledon, and the broadcast saying, oh, well, she'll be drug tested after this, like, you know, things of not to do as well. But, you know, Joe Buck was there, and Michael Kay was also there, and Kay got up and said, you know, I'm gonna have to call Alex Rodriguez's home run when he passes Willie Mays, when he gets a 3,000 hit this year, and I know that whatever happens, I'm going to be vilified for it, you know, whatever my call is, if I'm too ebullient, people are going to yell at me. If I don't see anything, people will yell at me for that. So I'm not sure what to do. And Joe Buck was there, and Joe Buck has had a lot of experience doing these kind of things. So it was kind of fascinating. He stood up and said, you know what, Michael, you just have to call it however you're going to and never listen to what the people say on Twitter about you, because no matter what, you are going to be vilified for it regardless. So you have to do what you think is right for you and what you think is right in that moment. If the crowd responds, if they don't respond, you have got to figure it out in the moment. You can't write it beforehand because it's never going to come out that way. And he even mentioned the one time when he called the Randy Moss mooning incident when he was like, oh, that's a disgusting act. You know,
everybody still gets on him.
Of course, whatever. And he said, I looked online the next day and I was basically the Taliban after that.
Yeah, pretty much. It pretty much was. I just don't, you know, like, if you, and obviously we, you know, we rarely comment on media things in this podcast. But, you know, one of the things that we complain about is broadcasters. We won't name any names, but broadcasters who talk just way too damn much. And Joe Buck is the opposite of that. And I love a broadcaster who will just let the moment be the moment.
Yeah.
And everybody says, oh, Joe Buck, he hates my team, or he's too dry, or he's boring, or he doesn't get excited.
Or he was in bed with Madison Bumgarner last postseason.
Exactly. Or is he had a famous father. And he does have a big forehead. He points that out, and that's correct. But Joe Buck lets the moments be the moments. And I love him.
That's the point.
And then there I was, just being put on blast. That's and then awesome. I had all these people like, oh, Buck, Savage, why aren't you like this on TV? And I'm like, no, I love you, Joe. What the hell happened here?
No,
I don't know. I'm just using my podcasting platforms to try to get Joe Buck to listen to me that I actually like him.
I think he has a pretty good idea of who he is as a broadcaster. And, you know, I hope he doesn't let the Twitter aspect of it come into it again. Because, you know, it remembers the Joe Buck show, and Artie Lang is the one that put him on blast and
I
got that thing canceled almost immediately.
I think that's why Joe Buck is back on Twitter, because he is getting a new show.
He is getting a new show.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think that's part of it is somebody probably told him, like, all right, Joe, you got to get back out there. And he was like,
but he's heard it from so many different anonymous jagoffs on the internet about how awful he is, how much he hates their team. It's like at some point you just got to let it go.
And there I was.
Yeah.
Trying to not be one of those guys.
I know. And you were that guy.
Whatever.
You're always that guy.
Whatever. Episode number 58 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast arrives in your ear canals. Who are we named after today, Anthony?
I mean, we've got four options, but only two are probably going to stick, and only one is going to be the vote for one of our followers, Bobby DeMuro, you can imagine, will be the number one.
Who is that?
The conductor of the Johan Flandé train. Because Johan Flandé.
We need to make Bobby a hat that has, like, Johan Flandé's picture on it. A conductor's
honestly,
hat.
I want to know if Bobby DeMuro is actually Johan Flandé's agent. And if he's not, I don't know why the hell Flandé would hire anybody else at this point.
Bobby is basically like, you know how a few years ago, I think, Drew McGarry of Deadspin put out a thing about how nothing viral on the internet is actually viral. Like, it's all just created by corporations. It was after the Harlem Shake. And then we found out that the Harlem Shake was actually just like a creation of a record label. Like, they actually made the whole thing go viral. And that's basically Bobby. Bobby is just, he is that for Johan Flandé.
It's very low stakes, Bobby. You need to aim higher. But so we have Johan Flandé, Jordan Pacheco, also wore 58 from 2011 to 2014, Juan Rincon from 2009 to 2010, and Dan Maselli in 2005. I think we got to go Flandé. I think it's a Flandé day.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, I mean,
what else are we gonna go with?
What the hell else are we gonna do?
Come on.
And Flandé has not been.
I was gonna say
terrible.
I was gonna say, is Johan Flandé ever gonna get any better than this?
No,
never
in his life.
We should
probably
just
do this
now. Good for you, Johan.
Yeah,
Johan with a Y. We had a Johan with a J whose last name started with a Y on the Pelicans in 2011. Johan Jan. And every time I see Johan Flandé and his first name starts with a Y, it always makes me think of Johan Jan, which is a very pointless story.
We also had a guy named Yiliar.
Yiliar Castro.
Yiliar Castro in 2010. Yiliar.
The thing I always remember about him is he would always get on the bus wearing his World Baseball Classic stuff because he was from Panama. He was from Panama City and played in the WBC in 2009. But he always get on, like everybody else would get on, they'd be wearing whatever. But he was always just decked out in Panamanian team gear. And I was like,
sweet.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You are awesome.
As he should be.
Yiliar Castro. So we've reached that part of the show where we just tell a random tale from minor league baseball. Well, let's go there. Speaking of minor league baseball, Anthony, I just got back from Albuquerque.
You lucky dog.
Sometimes I'll be quirky. Albuquerque.
Oh, my God.
It's from the Simpsons episode.
I know.
Okay.
I know it is.
It's the whole genesis of the thing.
But you're a dork.
Isotopes Park. Super cool. Really cool. Opened in 2003, I believe. Maybe 2002.
You should have known this.
I was just there. Probably should have prepped on some of this. But really cool facility. Got to meet Josh Suchon, who's the radio voice of the Albuquerque Isotopes, who you and I have watched many a time on MILB TV, MILB TV.
Oh, yeah.
And Josh, very cool. Lee Van Horn, their director of media relations, very cool. I'm sure that's not his actual title, but that's his job.
Close enough.
You know, minor league teams. Lee was even talking about somebody in the office, and he was like, you know, he's like our director of, I don't know, corporate something, whatever his title
director
is.
Of, director yeah, of basically. Synergic corporation sales.
When we were in Myrtle, what was Butter's title? Butter's title was like director of stadium operations and facility management, something.
Yeah, and what was
senior
Hogan?
Director? I think is what it was.
Oh, and Hogan was junior director.
Yeah, Hogan
was his,
junior
his
director.
Giant old dog who talked like this.
Who's still around, by the way?
That's amazing.
Old Hoagie.
Hogan was like, he was an old ass dog in 2010.
Yeah, and he is a very old dog now.
Yeah,
hanging around in Gwinnett. But yeah, Albuquerque, cool.
Good story, bro.
It's my whole review. Actually, I had to cut that sentence short because I sneezed immediately after saying "cool." But I bet you didn't even know that because podcasting magic.
Did you hit like the sneeze button? Do we have one of those?
I wish I had one of those. but I, you know, went down with my dad. We caught two games on – we're recording this on Thursday. We caught Tuesday and Wednesday night's games. Got a chance to talk to Tyler Matzik. You will hear that here shortly. Got a chance to talk to Trevor Story. If you want to catch that conversation, you can check it out at MILB.com, the Show Before the Show podcast. We talked to Trevor Story about coming up to Denver, you know, the imminency of that, the – pressure and the all the issues that go along with being the guy who's presumably going to quote unquote replace Troy Tulowitzki. So you can listen to that there. But more than anything, got to be around a minor league staff in the last week of a season. It's their last homestand, and that's like
those are like the greatest days.
Yeah, it's like people knowing that they've been pardoned from prison and just biding their time until they get out.
Yeah, and just hoping to not die in those 7 days.
Yeah, that's pretty much the only thing you need to control.
To not take a shank in the yard.
Yeah. Which could also happen in minor league baseball.
Yeah.
Both
so
in the yard.
I got three questions for you.
Yep.
How were Christian Adames, Trevor Story, and Tommy Murphy? Those are three guys that I would want to see if I was going to Albuquerque right now. I want to see how those guys were doing, how they were playing, what you saw from them. You saw the triple play.
I did see the triple play.
How did those three guys look?
Those three guys all looked fantastic. Tommy Murphy hit a solo home run in the ninth inning on Tuesday night.
He's
out to
seven homers
field.
In 23 games.
Yeah, Tommy's swinging a pretty good bat. He didn't play last night. Former Melbourne ace Ryan Castile got the start last night behind the plate. But Tommy Murphy homered in his final at bat on Tuesday night. Looks really good. Trevor Story, you can tell – even when I think at one point during the series, he was on like an 0 for 13 slide, but he had walked four times. So still seeing the ball well. And what Chris Jackson told us a couple of weeks ago is correct. Everything that comes off of Trevor Story's bat comes off hard.
Yeah.
And that's really impressive. And then he really found himself last night. I think he ended up having three hits, but looked really, really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Three for five, two RBI, a couple doubles, three RBI, two runs scored tonight, 1 for 4 with a run against the Nay Rockies AAA Philly Colorado Springs. So,
and last night they played the Nay Isotopes, the Oklahoma City Dodgers, who were the affiliate up until
so incestuous,
very weird in minor league baseball. And Christian Adames looked really good too. Adames is he has a very diverse skill set, and I like his approach at the plate. I like what he provides in the field, the fact that he can play a bunch of different positions. He looked really good. You know, who else I was pretty impressed with defensively was Angelis Nina. I thought Nino looked pretty good, too. Yeah. So, nice. You know, guys who are – they'll be role players if they make it up in September, whatever it is. But Adames was definitely impressive. But Story and Murphy were the two guys who stood out. And then Tyler Matzik goes out last night, gives up a hit and a walk, but gets a strikeout, gives up one run, and continues to be himself, which is a good thing. I mean that in a very good way.
Yeah, and we'll talk about him a little bit later.
We'll talk about him a little bit later on, but you said you had three questions. Were just those three
basically
guys?
Basically those three guys.
Oh, okay.
I do like Christian Adames, though. We're getting a lot of tweets on the tweet machine now
saying,
we have. Like, free Christian Adames, whatever. Yeah. And that's all well and good, but right now, where's he going to play?
Yeah, that's the issue with Adames. Club,
You're not gonna going move to second base. Move DJ. Right. And you're not going to move Jose Reyes at this point.
Right.
You know, in the offseason, hopefully. But
he doesn't want to be here, man. Can't be playing for a losing team.
Well, I mean, why would he want to be? I mean, that's true. To be perfectly honest, why would he want to be in Denver?
Why would you want to play for a losing team?
Yeah, I'm sure he's just so pissed that the Blue Jays traded him and went 21-5.
Yeah, I was going to say, can you imagine like being traded away from that team and coming to this team?
No, and you know what really does bother me, though, that, you know, we're getting a lot of people tweeting, on our timeline right now, like, oh, well, you know, Tulo, like, the, you know, the Blue Jays traded Jose Reyes a 708 OPS for Tulo's OPS. He's only OPSing 710 right now. It's like, dude, like, you know, one, that's a very reductive statement. They're like, oh, well, you know, they just replaced Tulo with a Reyes, and it's the same kind of production. That's incredibly reductive. First of all, Troy Tulowitzki's worth more defensively than Jose Reyes ever could be. The numbers back it up this year as well. One, two, Troy Tulowitzki is a guy that lineups have to fear. Jose Reyes is not that guy.
Right.
There's no it's not an accident that the team went 21-5 since Troy Tulowitzki joined that team. And it's not just what he's doing offensively. Tulo is having okay offensive run right now with the Blue Jays. Not his best run of his career by any stretch of the imagination, but at the same time, who cares? And I don't really understand the sentiment around Rocky's Twitter right now saying, like, oh, well, you know, Tulo, of course, he's, you know, going up there and just struggling like he always did with the Rockies. Like, fuck that. That's stupid. That's really dumb. That's a dumb, reductive statement, and you should be ashamed of yourselves for saying it on Twitter.
Did you happen to see the headline in the, I believe, Toronto paper?
The Blue Jays thrive on Tulowitzki's D?
Yep.
Yeah, they do.
Yep. Yep. Man, so it's not quite as simple as just Denver OPS used to thrive on that D.
Yeah.
Man, remember that D? That was some good D.
That was some great D. it's the kind of D that makes you look out the window when you're on a train driving upstate New York and just going, yeah, I remember that D.
What? What does that mean? What are you talking about? Also, did you say driving on a train?
I sure did. As a conductor, you're not paying attention. That's why there's so many lights on Amtrak's up in New England.
I thought Bobby DeMuro was a conductor.
No, only of the Flonday train.
Oh, okay, only the Flonday train. Okay. All right, I'm following
This is BDP After Dark.
Wow. Literally. Hi-yo.
It's also so damn hot here.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's really hot. And my apartment's like, it gets a lot of air coming in, but there's only AC in my bedroom, and it does not get to the rest of the house. So the bedroom is nice and cool, but nothing else is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want a funny story. I am actually wearing a tank top once owned by Chris Jericho.
What?
It's a true story. My junior year roommate in college, he was a movie film major, and he worked on a movie in the summer between our junior and senior years in the backwoods of Missouri, some like monster movie. I have no idea what it's even called or if it ever even came out, but Chris Jericho was like the star of the movie. And, you know, they would have to shuttle back and forth from the hotels to the, you know, shots and locations or whatever. So he had, you know, my friend had to drive Chris Jericho around. Like, apparently he just left this tank top in his car, like, one day. And, like, when he got back to school, he had it. And he was like, you want it? It was owned by Chris Jericho. And I go, hell yeah. Why would I not want that? So, yeah, that's the whole story about why I'm wearing a tank top with Los Angeles right across the front. A little bit of foreshadowing for my life. That was owned by Chris Jericho. And it barely fits me. I have no idea how he actually wore it.
Because they just, like, spray it on, those guys who are physically fit.
Like, Chris Jericho's a big, big
never
dude
known what that feels
with
like.
Actual muscles that can fill out this thing. I am not one of those guys. I do not have actual muscles.
I have speaking of just things that you own, I bought the Heisenberg shirt.
Of course you did.
Yep.
How could you not?
And I left Albuquerque with three hats.
Nice. I mean, best part of New Mexico is Christmasing everything.
New Mexico's cool, man.
Red and green chili on everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I got red and green chili.
I get Christmas every time in New Mexico on every possible thing. On ice cream. Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
I went and got ice cream with my mom recently and had a taste of a green chili ice cream somewhere. Ooh. I don't remember where that was. But when I was in New Mexico, had red and green chili on whatever it was I got at the ballpark, an Indian taco, I think it was. And then I got green chili on like everything else. I had, give or take, like six meals in New Mexico, and every one of them involved green chili.
It has to. That's the point. So that's why you go there.
Three hats, a t-shirt, and a ton of green chili. So those were my takeaways.
Is this a Rockies podcast?
I don't know. It's August, whatever it is. Like, what are we going to talk about?
Yeah.
You know.
It's August 27th.
Baseball. Hey, the Rockies won back-to-back games in Atlanta.
For the first time in how long?
2002. For the first time,
oh my God,
nearly 13 years to the day,
Yeah.
August 17th and August 18th of 2002, the Rockies won back-to-back games over the Atlanta Braves at Turner Field in Atlanta. Anthony, I'm going to give you five guesses to see if you can name the pitchers who got the wins in those games. Go.
Let's see. It would be in 2002.
2002.
Oh, boy.
One of them is Denny, fairly
Mike,
easy.
Mike Hampton?
No.
Is he one of them?
No.
Denny Stark?
Yes.
Really?
Denny Stark is one of them.
No kidding.
Denny Stark is one of them.
Oh, my God.
That was impressive.
I mean, Jennings, I guess.
Wow.
2002?
You are looking this up.
I'm not looking this up.
Wow. You just got both of them.
Who else got wins for the Rockies in 2002?
You got both of them. That was very impressive.
Wow.
Yeah. Denny Stark on August 17th. He beat Jason Marquis, the young Jason Marquis.
Ooh.
Jason Jennings the next day beat Greg Maddux somehow.
What?
So
I'm going to look this up.
That's something.
No way.
But that was it. And just for a little barometer of how long ago that was, 1 month before that, July 15th, 2002, this happened. According to Wikipedia, so you know it's wrong. Quote, in Washington, D.C., American Taliban John Walker Lind pleads guilty to aiding the enemy and possession of explosives during the commission of a felony. Lind agrees to serve 10 years in prison for each charge. And right now, I can hear Cameron Goldner going, who?
Who? I mean, I went who for a second.
Was Cam born?
In 2002? I don't know. It's a debate.
Yeah, he's like 17.
Yeah.
It's like 98.
Okay, I got this box score up when Jason Jennings out-dueled Greg Maddux. Maddux gave up 13 hits and 4 runs in 7 innings that game. It was his fifth loss of the year. He dropped to 11-5. His ERA was raised to 2.63 at that point. JJ gave up 2 earned runs on 5 hits in 6 innings. Larry Walker had 2 home runs. Walker and Jay Payton both homered off of Maddux.
Remember Jay Payton?
Yeah.
Jay Payton
hit 5th. He went 4-for-5 in that game.
Wow.
Also of note, Matt Franco started at first base for the Braves. He was pinch hit for by Julio Franco.
Wow.
No relation.
Julio Franco, I
well, probably at that point was like 1,000 years old. Now he's like 1,500 years old.
He's Methuselah. He's
yeah.
Balthazar.
I think he's, so.
What?
That's
Julio
fantastic.
Franco.
Hey, our friend Gabe Kapler was with the team at that point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Came in as a defensive replacement in left field. Here's a lineup that day. Juan Pierre in center, Terry Shumpert at second, Larry Walker in right, Todd Helton at first, Jay Payton in left, Brent Butler at third, Juan Uribe.
We just talked about Brent Butler in the trade that they acquired him.
Right.
I don't remember who it was for.
Juan Uribe at short, Gary Bennett behind the plate, and Jason Jennings.
Gary Bennett was...
Jack Cust pinch hit in that game.
Jack Gus is one of those dudes who had like 80 grade power
yeah.
and struck out a billion times a year.
Jose Jimenez got his 33rd save.
As a note, Julio Franco is 57 years old. He was playing independent ball as of last year. He played 7 games in the United League for the Fort Worth Cats, and he batted .222.
That's
with
awesome.
He had a double. He went 6-for-30, and he had a double. Like, 6-for-27, and he had a double. That's pretty damn impressive for 56 years old.
If you gave up a double to 56-year-old Julio Franco?
In the United League?
Yeah.
Like, maybe give it up, kid.
Wrap it up, man. Come on.
But that is how long ago it has been since the Rockies won back-to-back road games at Atlanta. And Anthony dug up, it's actually been pretty long since the Rockies won back-to-back road games, period.
When they swept the Phillies in Philadelphia the last weekend in May.
Remember that? You're like, all right, man, maybe they're going to start turning
it
around.
13 on the road going into June.
Yeah, remember that? Remember that?
No, I don't.
Yeah, that's hasn't really gone according
but,
to
you know, it's,
since then.
It's what we got. It's, you know, Chad Bettis looked okay in his 5 innings. You know, that's what you got to hope for.
Yeah.
Look forward. It was first start back in a while. You know, and they got that, you know, the opposite of Cardinals devil magic for Shelby Miller. That dude just cannot buy a break this year.
He's gone, I believe, like 18 straight starts.
18
without a
consecutive
hashtag
starts
win.
without a victory.
That's pretty amazing.
But his ERA this year is 2.62.
That's amazing.
He's got 18 starts without
a
win.
Happen?
And he was cruising into the seventh yesterday. And then, you know, a couple of well-timed base hits, a Baltimore chop off the bat of Charlie Blackman, and then a triple that Cameron Maybin played into one because he overran the baseball, which should have been probably just about a double for Jose Reyes.
Can we also just for a second discuss what the hell is with Braves fans?
There are just
like
general?
14 people at those games.
Well, you remember in the 90s when they were winning every single NL East title, they couldn't fill Fulton County Stadium at all. They were winning 100 games a year, and they couldn't fill that stadium because nobody in the South cares about professional sports. We lived in the South for many years. They only care about college, and they shell out for college sports. They love college
sports. Yeah, they go nuts.
More
they
than
go nuts
any
for college
other
sports.
Region in the country, they love college sports more than any other region in the country by far. It's not close. But pro sports, they could take him or leave him, honestly.
It is so weird because, you know, even like, and there's a whole range of things with Atlanta. I mean, obviously, they're building the new ballpark that's going to be open for 2017.
That they totally needed. And was
that they totally needed.
And was totally funded by just like horrible like FIFA corporations.
Yeah, basically. Atlanta's a weird situation in that. How do you put this all politely? The Braves want to be.
Why do you be polite? Who cares? This is a Rockies podcast. No one's going to be listening.
The Braves, and I've heard this from people inside the organization with the Braves. What did that guy say to us? I know people close to the organization.
Yeah. No,
the Braves want to be in a quote unquote affluent part of the Atlanta area.
They want to be in a white part, Tyler. That's what you're trying to say.
Yep.
Yeah.
The area where Turner Field is now is basically, it's not the nicest area of town, but the difference is, whereas Lodo was not a nice area of town when Coors Field was built there, things came in around it. The neighborhood changed. It wasn't just abandoned warehouses and crack dens.
And now it's awesome.
Yeah, and now it's amazing. In Atlanta, that just never really happened. And I think for a long time they hoped that it would. But it's not the same where, you know, people can come from Highlands Ranch, whatever it is, can come up for a Rockies game from decent neighborhood. They'll go back home. Everything will be fine. In Atlanta, everything is so segmented, and traffic is a nightmare. There's not great public transportation. Nobody wants to go to those games.
Right.
So, you know where they filmed Terminus in The Walking Dead? People?
Yeah.
That's like across the highway
from
Turner Field.
Yeah.
That's basically Turner Field's neighborhood was Terminus. And like they used it because it pretty much looks like a zombie apocalypse. So it's that's kind of the driving force behind building that new ballpark. But it's ridiculous because you look at those, that team is, you know, like they're not going to the World Series this year, but like it's not a terrible team. And there were like 12 people at those games.
Yeah.
Like, granted, I probably wouldn't pay money to watch the Rockies on the road either. But, you know, like, in other cities, even with bad teams, you still stumble into a crowd of 25,000.
It's a team that won 96 games 2 years ago. Man. Honestly, they're in a, you know, rebuilding effort now. I mean, clearly. But I don't know, man. It's tough. It's tough to watch those games. The Braves just aren't an interesting team at all.
No, they're not. They're not. There is not much interest.
And they would say the same thing about the Rockies. I don't care.
Right.
That's not the point of this. Like, the Braves are just a boring-ass team.
Every week we talk about how the Rockies aren't an interesting team.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Listen.
They're interesting. You can accuse them of a lot of things. They're interesting.
Yeah, the Rockies are in the throes of probably their worst season in franchise history. It could be at the end of it. I mean, who knows how it's going to be. And they won 6 of 7 from the Braves this year.
Like, what?
If that tells you anything.
How did that happen?
No, the best stat that I uncovered this year was that the Rockies are 20-10 when Daniel Descalzo starts.
That is the absolute best stat. That is the stat of all stats for this year.
Like, what the
should've traded Tulo on opening day.
Hey, I've been saying it all year,
would've
man.
Had 90
start
wins
Descalzo
already.
More.
With Danny D there, bro.
Hey, that's almost a 700 win percentage team, man.
Duh. How can you not see this coming, cheap farts?
Yeah. Yeah, cheap farts.
Mon farts.
Whoever pointed us out to cheap farts / mon farts being the Facebook nomenclature of the Rockies owners, thank you for that, because that is just fantastic.
I don't know who that was, but that is a good one.
That is a really good one. It might have been BK, I think.
Maybe
BK might have directed us toward the Facebook Rockies page, and I would never, ever touch that thing with a 4,000-foot pole.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no, I saw a headline on the old Twitter machine today about how Facebook has surpassed like a billion users per day. I haven't been on Facebook in...
It's been at least 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, a long time. Yeah. And there's like no more gratifying thing than that. It's like when I see like, yeah, Facebook, look at what's going on Facebook. I'm like, no, I would much rather not, because people like the Colorado Rockies fan page on Facebook, people are on Facebook.
Dude, the Instagram quotes are the best too. Like the Instagram comments too. Oh my God.
Because it's just a bunch of 15-year-olds trying to fight each other.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah. It's awesome. It's just laced with brutal profanity.
It's like bum fights in a middle school parking lot.
That is the best possible way to describe it. But, two uninteresting teams. You still would have figured there would have been 20,000 people at one of those games.
You know what's
funny?
Games, like,
it looked like a minor league game.
Last weekend, we got trolled so hard by Mets fans randomly, which is so sad.
Yeah. Yeah, like that's what I said. It's you know,
like Mets fans trolling Rockies fans.
It's the saddest thing on earth.
Depressing things.
It really
I've seen on the internet.
And when you are Mets fan, like your team, your team's name,
your team's a verb.
Exactly, your team is a verb for vomiting all over yourself. Basically, like when someone says, "How are they going to Mets this one?" That does not mean that you, as a franchise, have the right to go out and troll.
The first time you're good in about a decade, and you've been good for really half the season. Like, you're good because the Nationals have completely just shit the bed.
Yes, basically.
Like,
pretty much.
And that's all it takes for bandwagon fans to come out of the woodwork. He did make an interesting point, though, which we eventually made up with him and made nice, but...
Yeah, like how that guy tried trolling us for two tweets, and then he was like, "Oh, you guys picked up a listener." And I was like, "What? We weren't even being nice to you. What are you talking about?"
Yeah, we were, whatever. It's fine. But like, you know, he said some like trollish quote about like, "Oh, maybe someday when the Rockies are good, you'll, you know, sell out an opposing like section of fans."
Right.
And like, I was thinking about it. I was like, well, whatever. That's a dumbass troll quote. But at the same time, like, can you imagine like a whole bank of Rockies fans in like Marlins Park.
Nope.
When the Rockies are fighting for the NL West crown. Can you imagine that actually happening?
Not
I can't.
At all. No.
And I'm not sure if it's just because we're in the middle of like the most depressing stretch of baseball in Rockies history, but I really actually physically cannot picture
me neither.
A group of Rockies fans like banding together and going to a ballpark. I'm not saying it wouldn't happen if the Rockies are good again.
Right.
If they're, you know, going to win the division title, if they're challenging the Dodgers, it's a big race and, you know, who knows. Of course it could happen. But I was wondering, is the reason why I can't picture it, not because the Rockies don't have a lot of people going to games, of course they always do. Right now they're sixth in the National League in attendance, like they usually are.
Cheap farts.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Making money.
Making money all the time. Party decks. Whatever. But is it because Denver is so full of transplants anyway that it's hard to gain like a real solid just – straight Rockies fan base? You go to Coors Field since its inception, and most of the time there is a good number of opposing teams fans, or even like terrible teams like the Marlins have fans come in and like make noise in Coors Field. Like, is that why? I was thinking about that today. Like, is that the reason why I can't picture it?
That's a good question. I think one of the reasons why fan bases like the Mets have a lot of people able to do that. One guy tweeted at us and was like, "I saved up since last November to make this trip."
Like,
what is wrong with you, man?
They were going to be good at all, by the way, sir.
No. So like, you were planning to buy like airfare and a hotel and whatever to come out to
saved
Denver
up
to watch
grand,
the Mets.
He said, who cares if he's lying? That's
right.
Whatever. He still came to the game. Like,
I think, you know, what makes it different is these other teams, like, you know, the Cardinals and God knows the Red Sox and the Mets to an extent and the Dodgers, now the Giants.
They've been around forever.
They've been around forever, A.
At least they have, you know, Mets haven't been around forever, but they have, like, big stories. They've won a couple titles.
Right.
Yeah.
They have national followings because, you know, one, markets, obviously,
sure.
But two, there was a different way to become a baseball fan before the internet. And it was, well, this was my dad's team, or this is the team I could get on the radio when I was a kid, or this was the team that I saw most on television, or
this
is the first team
that was on the one televised baseball game every Saturday, you know?
So I think that's why a lot, I mean, we've talked about this a little bit before, but I think that's why there are so many St. Louis Cardinals fans here and Chicago Cubs fans, is because before the Rockies were around, you could get Cardinals games on the radio, and I believe you could get Cubs games on TV.
Well, that's why Braves fans are around in our generation.
Right, exactly.
More Braves fans from everywhere, because it was always on the Superstation. It's on TBS Superstation, and the Cubs were on WGN. And those are the games you could always find on TV. If nothing was on, you could flip around and always, oh, well, hey, Braves are on. I'll watch that game. Oh, Cubs are on. Oh, they're a fun team right now. I'll watch that team.
Yeah.
Braves were always very good in the 90s, obviously. They won a World Series. They won their division like 100 years in a row.
Basically.
So, yeah. That's why I think you find Braves fans around the country more than you find them in Atlanta.
I think what it is with the Mets is – I think there is a segment of people who just really love the whole underdog thing, and the Mets could win 15 World Series in a row, and they're going to be little brother
forever.
They're
still the Mets.
Exactly. Yeah. They're still the Mets.
Yeah.
So I think that appeals to people. And I also, you know, I think that there is an allure to the idea of what the Mets have built in spite of. It's not just the underdog thing and, oh, big market and they're always going to be Yankees, whatever. But I think it's, you know, ownership group has had a very eventful few years. And in spite of that...
Getting swindled?
Yeah. In spite of that, they have likable guys. They've got a ton of talent.
The Mets are a great team.
Yeah, they're a very
fun
team to watch.
Absolutely. I mean, we saw the brunt end of that, of how fun they are in that series last weekend at Coors Field.
He's good.
Oh, my God.
But, you know,
they had three more home runs in Philly. They won in 13, scored four runs in the top of the 13th inning. Like,
I just, like,
they're a fun team to watch.
Yeah, but I just, like, you know, it's so convenient that you all happen to make this trip this year.
Yeah, come on.
I haven't seen any of you at Coors Field for the last decade, but all of a sudden, everybody's a Mets fan.
And they're all diehard,
and it
too,
just
you know?
Happens to be the year that they're good. Okay. Everybody, I've been a Mets fan since I was a kid.
Since 69, man.
Shut up. Nice. You went to a game one time when you were a kid, and now you've been a Mets fan forever. Is that what it is?
Do they make pink hats for the Mets?
Yeah, I'm sure they probably do.
Just like everybody in Boston sure when bought their, you know, just they're worn down 47s from New Era for $68. And it's like, oh, yeah, I've been a Red Sox fan since 86, man. They broke my heart. No,
I remember the moment that I turned completely on the Boston Red Sox. And, well, there were a
lot. It didn't take much, but yes.
There were a lot of them.
I rooted for them in 04, hardcore.
See, I, in 03, started to dislike them because of when Pedro threw Don Zimmer to the ground, and I was just like, you can't do that to Don Zimmer. I was a Zim guy. He was a Rocky for, like, a hot
minute. Sure, but Zimmer kind of deserved it.
Zimmer totally deserved it. And I love Pedro so much now, and I hated Pedro at the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't like him then. But when I was in school, the University of Nebraska, the fall of 2004, some frat on campus hung a banner out their window that said "Reverse the Curse" in Lincoln, Nebraska, in 2004. And I was like, no, this has gone on far enough. And so from that moment, I hated Boston sports like none other.
At Kenyon College, there's a lot of massholes at Kenyon.
Are there really?
Oh, there's a ton. It's more like upper crust school, especially now the fact that they, you know, they're charging $45,000-$50,000 a year for tuition because they think they're an Ivy League.
Excuse me, money bags.
Yeah, sorry. No, it's a lot of New York, it's a lot of Boston, a lot of DC, a lot of LA, San Francisco. Like, it's a lot of those, like Chicago. It's a lot of like big cities.
Huh.
And like
Powell.
Powell, Wyoming. They all send their kids to Kenyon College.
New York, Boston.
So it,
LA,
there was a lot of. Yeah, exactly. There was a lot of pro-Boston sentiment running through the middle path at Kenyon College.
I don't even know what we got on this topic. Makes me so angry.
This has been a fun podcast. Because
this has been a fun podcast because we haven't talked about anything because there's nothing we're talking about. No.
Yeah.
This is like our second or third straight or 58th straight week of living up to that guy's description of us on iTunes. It would just sound like two drunk guys talking about the Rockies in a bar.
Yeah,
basically the entire calling of this podcast.
That's true.
Why not? So should we like do something actual then? Should we do? Like
yeah, an actual I say let's see what Tyler Matzik had to
all
say.
Right.
When he talked to him this week.
Let's hear from Tyler Matzik. Grabbed him for a couple of minutes yesterday at Isotopes Park in Albuquerque, and Tyler Matzik joins the show next.
It was a couple of months ago, the last time we saw Tyler Matzek on a mound in a Colorado Rockies uniform, but he is back playing professional baseball in a sweet ballpark in a cool town that has a whole lot of tourist attractions we were just talking about. It's good to see you, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. So take us through your last few months. I mean, obviously it's been different from the last few seasons for you, but it seems like you're in a good place right now. How are you? I mean, that's a question that I think you throw out, and it's just a throwaway question, but that's a genuine question with you. How are you doing right now?
I'm doing real well. Went home, had to work with a sports psychologist, worked with him for about a month, fixed some things in my head, and feeling really good right now. So just looking forward to playing baseball.
You get sent here to Albuquerque initially, back after starting the year in the big league rotation, and then there's a stop in Boise, then you're an extended and get the time off at home, and I may have that timeline wrong with when you were where or whatever it is, but when you got to go home, was it a relief? Did you get a sense of, all right, get things corrected, get, you know, work with somebody, get it all figured out, or is it kind of, you know, a little bit of an itch to get back? What did you feel more of during that break?
I definitely didn't want to be going home. I want to be out playing baseball and competing, and that's what I want to do. So to be told I should go home and go work with a sports psychologist, you know, it was a bit of a punch in the gut. But I think putting my dignity aside, I guess, just going, all right, we're gonna go all in on this process, and that's what I did. I just went all in on it, tried to do it as quick as possible, and really take advantage of the opportunity to go work with my mental skills guy, and I feel like it's paid off.
What do you learn in those things? I mean, for people who aren't familiar with it, is it more of a conversation, a therapy type of thing, or is somebody with you while you're doing your work on a mound, or how does that work?
It's kind of more like a therapy thing. You know, I don't think it's structured like therapy.
You're not laying on a couch and throwing a baseball in the air like Ricky Vaughn.
No, it's nothing like that. It's just more of a rewiring about how you think about baseball and, your thought process before each pitch and after each pitch. And, sometimes that can go awry, and, he just helped me line it back up.
Let me ask you this question. We talked with Jason Hirsch on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and he said a lot of times intelligent guys, it's almost a detriment to being good at baseball when you know how to think. You know how to analyze yourself. You know how to be intelligent about that stuff. Sometimes the best professional athletes are just the dumbest human beings on earth. Being a brighter guy, a guy who is analytical and self-critical, do you think that can be somewhat of a drawback? Is that something that you had to learn how to compensate for and correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always my toughest critic. Mm-hmm. And, sometimes I got to give myself a break. It's not always a bad thing, though. I feel like I can, it helps me on the mound just as much as it hurts me. You know, I can read a swing, I can read the next pitch, what it should be, and kind of see the game unfolding before it even happens. Mm-hmm. But, it does also give me some self-criticism that doesn't always help.
The Rockies are really good about, I mean, Zach Wilson said throughout this entire thing, they know you're a major league starter, they know you have the capability to be there, what you did at the end of last season, all that. And I think what speaks really highly of you is that they didn't send you to Boise when you got back, they didn't send you to Grand Junction, wherever, you got thrown back into the fire here. That first outing, a few walks, but you get out of it, against a really tough lineup in Fresno, I think, that game. And to be able to go out, avoid damage, and then immediately come back and start having success, what did that first outing show you? That you're able to get out of a jam, don't let any runs across, and now all of a sudden it's back to business and back to work.
Yeah, I think I had three walks. I think two of them were for decent walks. Guy had
and you were getting squeezed, I think, too.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that. I'm just going to say the hitter had a decent at bat, both of them. And, I felt comfortable. That was the biggest thing. You know, I get in that situation earlier when things weren't right, and I kind of crumbled. But I felt really confident, felt fine the whole entire time I was out there, continued to make pitches and got out of the situation, and yeah, felt good.
Last two times out now have been 1-2-3 innings, you're getting ground balls, you're getting strikeouts, command looks really good. Does it sort of work incrementally as well in that the more good outings you have, the more confidence you have, and then maybe that mentality gets back of where you were toward the end of last season, whatever it is, where all of a sudden it's just that reaction, it's just that click of being able to go out and do it and repeat it?
The confidence isn't built on the previous outing because you have a bad outing, you're not going to be confident in your next one. So it's really just self-confidence in the process and knowing the process. If you trust the process, you can kind of relax and understand that it's going to happen, good or bad, and it's kind of a weight off your shoulders. If you're sitting there thinking, you know, oh, don't give it up because I've been throwing well, mm-hmm. or you're also thinking, you know, if I pitch bad here, I'm not going to be able to pitch good the next time. You know, confidence doesn't work that way. You got to be an individual, self-confident person, and you know, it's hard to do in a very negative game. Mm-hmm.
When you go out in a relief role now, I mean, so many people look at that and think, well, what are they doing with Matzik? Is he going to be a bullpen guy now? Is he going to be a closer? Is he going to be – what is he going to be? But I think the flip side of that is you're getting meaningful innings while being in situations where you have a position to succeed. What have the Rockies said to you about the future pathway for you and what they want to see, if they want to see you back in the rotation, all that kind of stuff?
You know, we were just taking it one day at a time. The fastest process for me to get back to facing hitters was just to go into relief. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't have to build up to 100-plus pitches, which would take some time. We'd run out of time by the end of the season. So they said, and I agreed, you know, let's just throw in the bullpen, see how many times you can get out there. You know, it's not so much the pitching that needs help. It's just, you know, the mindset. Mm-hmm. So if you can go in and practice your mindset 4 or 5 times a week instead of once or twice, we'd much rather do that. So that was the thought process behind it.
This clubhouse seems like a great group of guys for you to be around, too. Just, you know, watching you guys – I was here yesterday a little bit, too, and just watching the bullpen, you know, watching stuff pregame, that seems really key, is having a group of guys who are all committed and you know, good to be around also. Because especially by the end of a season, you know, 144 games, if it's a struggle, guys get tired and guys get exhausted of being around each other. And it's like everybody gets annoyed with family. This is a family you got to be with for, you know, 10 hours a day for 144 days basically straight. But what's that been like for you to have the support of, you know, not just the guys in the front office, but the guys in the clubhouse, guys you get to be thrown on the field with? How much has that helped this whole process?
It's been huge. You know, guys have not questioned me, not said anything to me. You know, they've had my back the whole time, and those are great teammates, and I appreciate every single one of them. And the front office has always had my back too, pitching coaches, everybody. So it's helped the process immensely.
Last thing for you, we were talking a minute ago about going to see Breaking Bad sites in Albuquerque, and since this is such a good story, I have to have you tell the story now to our listeners of when you went and saw Walter White's house.
Yeah, so me and my wife decided, you know, we're going to go look at some Breaking Bad stuff. And it was late at night. It was probably about 9 o'clock. I think it was.
Oh, you left that part out.
It was after a day game. So
it's a normal time of day, though, still. So it's not like you were there at 3 in the morning.
No, we weren't. So we just drove by. And we saw online that it said, like, you know, beware, the residents of the house don't really like, you know, people coming up to the house. So we were like, all right, we'll just drive by real slow. We weren't there for more than 10 seconds. We didn't even take pictures. We just rolled by real slow, and the door swings open. She starts yelling at us, hey, get out of here. That's enough. That's enough. So we kind of got kicked out from taking a picture of the house, and yeah, that was the story.
Didn't throw a pizza on the roof. Didn't do it. You know, you're not burning it down. Still getting yelled at by the Breaking Bad.
No, we didn't even get out of the car.
Unbelievable. Tyler Matzik causing a domestic ruckus in Albuquerque. It's great to see you back, man, and congrats on the success, and we'll see you back in Denver soon.
Yeah, thank you very much.
It's one of my favorite dudes that I've come across in the baseball world, Tyler Matzik. A big thanks to Tyler for joining the show. I thought his honesty is, like, unparalleled. You never get any bull from Tyler Matzik. It's always whatever he's actually thinking in that moment, whatever. You know, I asked him, does it help when you go out outing after outing, you have success, you can build confidence off of that? He said, no, I don't really base my confidence on outings, because then if I struggle, then what am I going to do the next time? And I thought that was really, you know, normally guys would be like, yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it is. You want to make sure that you go out there, have success, and that's how you start continuing to repeat that. And Tyler Matzik said, no, that's not really it. I also thought the most illuminating thing he said was the Rockies asked him, you know, we want to get you back in facing hitters as quickly as possible. Are you okay to do that in relief? And he said, absolutely. So it's not, yeah. We heard so much, oh, what are the Rockies doing? Are they going to make him a reliever? Is he going to be a closer, a big power arm out of the bullpen from the left side, whatever it is? No, they just wanted to get him in without having to build him up. And as he said in there, they would have run out of time. Had they tried making him back into a starter before the end of the year, building up the pitch count, all that stuff, you run out of time eventually, because the season in the minor leagues is over in the next couple of weeks. So it's great to see him. He seemed relaxed. You know, he's hanging around the guys, and it seems like he's having a good time. He noted there at the end, the guys have been so supportive of him. Nobody has said one word about it. Everybody is just, when he got back, it's great to see it, and he's back in the mix. And that's really cool. It's just good. Really good to see Tyler Matzek.
He's allowed one hit in his five appearances. After the first appearance, when he walked three, struck out two, we thought, oh, kind of the same kind of Matzek. The four appearances since then, he's struck out three. He's only walked two. He's going to have just the one hit, the one run, like you mentioned in last night's contest. I mean, if you can't root for a guy like Tyler Matzek, then we have nothing in common. We can't help you at all. If you don't want to see Tyler Matzek back in Rockies pinstripes as soon as possible, getting hitters out, then you shouldn't be a Rockies fan. Because this is a guy that you should get behind and you should root for in every possible way. He has done so much and put in so much hard work. He's had to deal with mental demons, of course. Obviously, we've seen that happen, but he's coming back from it for the second time. Like, a lot of guys who have less fortitude than Tyler Matzek would have packed it in by now and gone into real estate.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Tyler Matzik's 24 years old. That's
so crazy.
He's coming back for the second time in his professional career from having these mental issues that have erupted on him inexplicably, really. And I think that you said that perfectly, that if he dwells on one outing, if he has a bad outing, then he's dwelling on it for 5 days.
Yeah.
And that compounds the next start you have. If you have another bad start, well then, oh geez, well, that's two straight starts now that it's been 10 days that I've been, terrible and wallowing in self-pity. Whatever works for him to get back to the pitcher that we saw him be last year, who cares? Whatever it takes, do it. That's fine. You got to root for a guy like Tyler Matzek. He has been a very good story this last month for the Rockies organization in a year where they need good stories. And Tyler Matzik's definitely been one this month.
I really hope we see him up. Really hope we see him up next month.
It would be awesome if we could.
And it's really exciting just to see him in a place where he's starting to feel comfortable with himself again. And again, like you said, he's 24.
Yeah.
And when I asked him, do you think that being a guy who is, smarter than the average guy, do you think that plays against you more than it plays for you? And he said, no, I don't think so, because I think it helps me, be able to analyze things that I'm doing, things that hitters are doing, things that hitters are going to do, all that kind of stuff. He just had an honest, forthright, and good, clear answer for everything.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I don't really know. I mean, I'm just trying to get through these mental things, whatever.
It wasn't,
Right.
Yeah,
he has a handle on these things.
Yeah, I think he knows himself very well, which obviously, as we have seen, can be to his detriment at times. But he's got the stuff to be a very effective major league pitcher, whether that's as a starter, whether it's as a reliever. We're not sure yet. Obviously, the team wants him to be a starter because we saw what he can do last season. ERA just over four, pitching complete game shutout at Coors Field. This is the kind of things that he can do. He's got that first-round pedigree for a reason. And he should be in the plans for the Rockies going forward in some capacity, but it's just good to see him back pitching meaningful innings. And that's, I think, what the Rockies are trying to do right now. And we talked about this before we started recording, but you have to credit the organization for letting him do this. And this time it wasn't going back to his high school coach necessarily. It was, the mental skills coach, which the Rockies have employed maybe not as long as other teams, but they've had a mental skills representative on staff for at least 5 or 6 years. I mean, I remember Jorge De La Rosa was one of the first ones who at least publicly was using a mental skills coach with the Rockies. And because he was, had his mental issues when he first came to the team. And basically, if he didn't have that mental skills coach, DLR probably still wouldn't be with Colorado. I mean, I think that guy has really done wonders with De La Rosa, and that's why he's still here. The Rockies have been at the forefront of doing this. I mean, I think I haven't really heard of too many other teams who have employed this way back when De La Rosa was doing it. But, it's good to see that every one of these teams in the Major League Baseball has one of these kind of guys right now. And they're using, they're doing good for Tyler Matzek, of course. And Matzek seeing whoever he needs to see and getting back in the mound, that's the most important thing. And the fact that he's actually getting guys out, too, at the AAA level, that only bodes well for the future.
Just remember that in his last seven starts last year, Tyler Matzek went 4-3 with a 1.90 ERA. That was the seventh best mark in baseball. Over his last six starts, he had a 1.55 ERA. That was the sixth best mark in baseball. Tyler Matzek is a major league caliber starter. He is a major league caliber arm. He just had to get some things figured out in his head. And I think when you are somebody of his level of intellect, now having that experience, being able to go talk to a sports psychologist, being able to work through some of those things, I think that he's the type of guy who can thrive off of that, because he's going to be as analytical about those things as he is about everything that goes on the mound.
Right.
So that's where I think it turns from a big detriment into, you know, a possible asset for Tyler Matzek going forward. And it's just, you know, again, like you said, if you can't cheer for a guy like Tyler Matzek, you don't have any room for any sort of happiness in your fandom. And generally that jibes very well with us.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's he's such an easy kid to root for. And, you know, you really can't help but be thrilled for him.
So do it. So root for him.
Exactly. Yeah. You jerks.
Yeah. You big dummies.
So I don't know. What else we got? Nothing.
Really? we've had about an hour of
We've had about an hour of we haven't really talked about much of anything at all. John Gray, not good his last time out.
No, he was not.
He'll go again tomorrow. That will be Friday. You should be hopefully listening to this by Friday. If you're not,
You can actually send it to BK this time.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I'll try that.
And actually just not leave it in your outbox.
Be a smart idea, probably.
Yeah. Hey, how about that next time? You know?
Yeah.
By the way, Purple Row BK sent us a couple of tunes for this week. So in case you were wondering what we brought in and will be taken out by, the first song is called Robots 3 Human Zero, which is from one of Brian's old friends and former bandmate in Norma Jean, who has a new album coming out soon. This also features Chino Moreno from the Deftones on guest vocals. That was the song that brought us into the show. And the song taking us out of the show today is a group called the Heartless Breakers. Heartless Breakers have this track Subdued, and that'll be taking us out. And you can send us your tones, tunes, and what else do they call them? I don't know. I'm not good with the slang of the kids these days.
I mean, they don't call them tones.
Ma, send us your tones, see? Ma, some real good tones. Ma. Ma. Not so much? No. That's not it?
Nope. Sorry. Send us your tracks.
Ah, tracks. That's a good one.
Come on, man.
Yeah, send us some tracks. PurpleDinosaurPodcast@gmail.com. You can buy t-shirts at Humble Monster as well. Anthony is on Twitter. He's at Master Tones. I'm at Tyler Mon. Purple Row is at Purple Row. ESPN Denver at ESPN underscore Denver. Thanks to those guys for hosting the show. And until next one, Pete Rose joins us.
Hey, I saw Pete today. Fox Sports. On the show tomorrow as well.
Really?
Yeah, he sure is.
On the PDP tomorrow? Or are we?
Yeah, he's on the PDP tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
We're going to ask him the hard-hitting questions. Tomorrow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Good to know.
Yeah.
That is good to know.
But actually, watch P. Rose on MLB Whip Around tomorrow.
Oh, on MLB Whip Around.
At 5 p.m. Mountain, I guess.
Oh. Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's me, Pete, and Frank, man.
Two of them have accomplished a lot in life.
Yeah. I know. I mean, I'm doing pretty well for myself. If you don't, whatever, it's fine. No, don't worry. It's, you know. Don't ask me how I'm doing, Tyler. We started this, you know, this whole
how
podcast
you doing,
about
Anthony?
What you're doing
how
and
how
you,
doing, you
are.
How are you?
Your Twitter spats with famous Fox celebrities.
How are you, Anthony?
Well, you don't even know. You don't even know those guys.
No, I want to know Joe Buck.
I'm in meetings with those guys.
I want to be friends with Joe Buck. And now here it is. I blew it.
Yeah, you sure did. You sure did.
By him jumping to Twitter conclusions. It's a jump to conclusions, Matt.
Jump to Twitter conclusions, Matt. Also, the fact that Twitter has not invented a sarcasm font, I don't understand. That's,
idiots.
Like, if you would have tweeted in that, or if you had tweeted in that, then it would be like, okay, we all get each other now.
Right, exactly.
I think once
everybody understands.
Sarcasm font is invented, I think world peace will be achieved.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. You and I could get on that. We can make a lot of money.
It's true.
Probably not.
Just talk to Tyler at Humble Monster.
See if he can design us a sarcasm font.
Sarcasm font.
Remember when we were when you joined? God, we're going so far off the rails. But when you joined the staff of the Pelicans, I gave you that folder of fonts, and there was one in there called Bottled Farts.
Oh yeah,
that'll be the sarcasm font. Sarcasm font will just be Bottled Farts.
I still remember also when Jake White had like the ghosting feature, and he. Were you like spun around really fast and he made you disappear?
That's still on YouTube, I think.
I know.
If you search me on the Google machine, I think that's still on YouTube. It's called like Tyler's New Trick or something like that. And I just disappear into a cloud of nothingness.
By the way, if you want to see
this
us,
is what a lot of people wish would happen.
If you want to see us do a lot of really stupid stuff and act really dumb, go search Myrtle Beach Pelicans 2010 commercials on YouTube.
Everyday Play by Play, I think it was called.
Yeah, Everyday Play by Play with Tyler and Anthony. It really was, though.
Really, it's basically my only.
Well. Good night, Anthony.
Bye.
Bye.
It's likely I'm content through my many friends. I score spirits to the end. Oh, I swear we do not rest. I'll take the driver's side to the dead end of my soul.
BK just tweeted out a picture of Drew Swisher. You're blocked from following Drew Swisher and viewing Drew Swisher's tweets. And he says, I think he's the only person who – he's actually the only person who has me blocked.
It took him forever.
This
yeah.
must be a this must be a thing right now on Twitter. Hashtag tweet your favorite block.
Ooh, okay. I like it. I mean, Garrick.
We have,
Garrick 38, yeah.
We have so many to choose from.
Ooh, oh, well. I don't know. Should we do Saunders or should we do... I think Saunders.
Yeah,
I
mean, it's got to be Saunders. I'll do it. Yeah. I'll handle these honors. I'll handle these Saunders.
Oh, ayo. That's really funny, though. Tweet your favorite block. It's great.
Oh, God.